hey, we're here. So we tried to write out three things like for our intro, and here's the thing. We couldn't think of anything, and we just sat here for like 20 minutes and stared at a blank piece of paper. So next on Tom and Hank Talk About It All. Boo, 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 boo.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Hi. Welcome back, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
Am I hot? I'm hot. Okay. Welcome back.
Are you good?
So this is the first time that I've ever recorded, and it's going to take a little while. Also, we don't know where we are, what we're doing. There's something about a new president. I don't know. Some sort of military coup. I don't.
Well, here's the thing. So, hi, everybody. This is Hank Hedlund. How are you today?
Banks and Hedlund Incorporated.
Banks and Hedlund Incorporated. So, hi. It's been a moment. Trust me, we've heard you. We've gotten emails. We've been stopped in person.
We've been told by Derek several times, just fucking make the podcast.
Why don't you fucking record it? That's not what Derek sounds like. But so, hi. We're back, and we're very happy. But yeah, we are a little slightly bit discombobulated. This world has been really weird the past couple of months that we haven't been here. You know, there was a moment, I think the last one we put out was September 20th. Well, on the 29th, I turned 51. And within 23 days, I turned 51. I fractured two toes. I pulled a muscle in the back of my leg. I went to the emergency room for kidney stones. And my sweet dog, Baxter, died.
Aw, Baxterino.
Our little Baxter, who's always here with us when we record. That's another thing. I've just needed some time.
He's kind of here.
He is here. He is here physically in a little cedar box. He just came home this week, and it made me so happy, and it has been a really hard thing for me, and I just needed a little time. Yeah. And I said to Tom before, like, obviously, I was extremely upset, and it was horrible when my father passed away. But this seems to have been tougher on me because Bax was, as you know, as a pet owner, your pet, especially a dog, needs attention and requires attention and requires walking. And so you do things together all the time, and you're like a team. And my ex-husband had Baxter before we got together, but we pretty much fell in love right away, me and Bax, and he was my little guy and is always will be. And a week ago, I would have been crying while I said this, but seriously, since his ashes arrived back home, it's made me so just kind of better. I just know that he's here with me, and we had to make a decision. He was 18 years old, and he lived a very long life. We know people who've had two pets in that time.
He never quite got facial expressions down. It was the thing.
He had
his, like, his basic, and he's like, you know what? Why bother with others? They take so much effort, you know? Some dogs smile with their tongues out and, like, look excited, and other dogs, you know, look forlorn and sad. And he's like, I just go for, like, dog.
I just go for, like, non-plus.
And here's the thing. People know what I say about dogs. Baxter was not a fake dog. He was a real dog.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's like the Velveteen dog.
And
he was a real dog.
And it was, it has been great because so many people loved him. And he was he just literally looked like he was kidnapped all the time. He just had a very blank expression on his face.
Yeah, and he was my nephew, and he was a good boy. And, like, he and I, you know, like, I got to walk him all the time and take him, like, when you went somewhere or needed, I would come over and take him for walks and stuff, and we would run around in the grass. And then the last time I walked him is when is when we went out, and he took a huge dump right in front of that dad and the girl. And then I went to take the little dog poo bags out, which I'm not a pet owner, so I'm not really used to dog poo bags. But the dog poo bag thing was empty.
The little holder didn't.
But the little girl and the dad had been watching Baxter poop. And I was like, I gotta, like, just leave the poo here in the grass or the kids playing. And then I called you and was like, I don't know what to do. And you're like, I'll come get it. And I was like, no, I'll go clean it up. I just don't know what to do. There's a mom and there's a dad and a little girl staring at me, and Baxter's wagging his tail and thinks it's dinner time, and I got to leave this greasy plop here. Like, oh, man. Thanks, Bax. Also, that was the first and only time he ever pooped in my presence.
That was his thing. Yeah. We were very lucky, and we were very lucky that when we had to make the decision, I cannot speak more highly of a business called Pet Hospice, and they came here to my house, and it was a horrible experience, but it was the best, because right now we would not have been able to go to our own vet, or we would have been able to, but we would not have been able to go inside, and that was not an option for me. And a really very lovely doctor came over and helped the transition, and it was horrible and wonderful. But I know that people who listen to us know Bax too, and he was the best. And I will, but you know, here's the other thing though. Now people come up to me, and especially because I'm a gay person, I can say this, especially lesbians are like, go get another one. Go right now and get another dog right now. Go today and get another dog. And I'm like, listen, Butch, you need to listen, fella, you need to turn it down a little bit. I am not going to do that. And I will never have another dog in my life. Bax was my dog, and that's it. But but otherwise there was this little thing called the election, and that also caused real stress in all of us.
It's still causing stress. For some reason.
Well, I can tell you one reason, and it is orange, and it's not Garfield.
It smells like old ham, probably. And it's like old, like the ham that's been sitting out for like several weeks.
I bet he
Where
he
it gets
does.
Like crusty on the edges, so it's like crispy looking.
Because he only likes McDonald's, right? Like, literally, like, at 2 o'clock in the morning, he has McDonald's.
No, because there's a video of him eating a taco where the eagle tries to eat his face off or something. I don't know.
Well, anyway.
You know what? He has here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. I don't even remember the dude's name, but here's what's going to happen. He is going to have to survive off of the warehouse of steaks from his steak company that went under. He never did anything with those steaks. They're just sitting in a giant warehouse, a giant freezer warehouse that we're probably paying for. None of this is true.
But see, here's the other thing. He will now, like, okay, so I sent you a meme last night that was like the jerk, because you had literally just quoted the jerk the other day, where you were like, all I need is this, and I'm just gonna, and there's a meme of him like leaving the White House and saying all he needs is this and this, and then his Twitter account. And now here's the thing, he is, oh my god, that fucking Twitter account has been a problem since he got it. It's been a problem while he was the occupant of the White House. I will never ever, and I don't think I ever have, called him the P word. Well, that one, the PR word. But that, his fucking Twitter. But I will say, last Saturday, a week ago today, we found out, and then this week we have since found out that all of the electoral college votes can't be changed, and every lawsuit has been turned away with literally like a chuckle.
Well, they've all been dropped now.
Yes, they've all been dropped.
Because they all realize that there's no possible.
And I will say, I have real fear for the future with Amy Coney Barrett in that. But I will say what she said when she took this is that she would do it on law, not on personal principle or religious principle. She would do it on law. And I will say, she was the one this week who was like, none of that is real. Like, she really did turn things down that people thought he put her in there to be like, oh no, he can do whatever he wants, he's the president. No, she really has voted very quickly and very well, and really following the letter of the law. And I do respect that. I don't have tons of hopes, but I do see that she's coming in and doing the job that she's supposed to do legally.
I'm sorry, what? This is a fucking news talk show?
No, but
you know what? I'm out of here.
We never talk about the news, and we're doing it for a fucking moment.
You know why? Because it's fake. Why do you think I'm not wearing a mask right now?
Wear a mask.
I thought everyone just kept saying wear masks, so I have been walking around with this ferret for days.
Just rubbing.
Rubbing it on my arm, under my arms, on my back.
What is that? Like, oh, it's Rabid Ferret.
It's my ferret.
That's Rabid Ferret by Lady Gaga. That's her new. That's her new.
I have two. I have Barrett and Jarrett. Barrett and Jarrett Ferret. Guess what their favorite food is?
Carrots.
That's right.
I couldn't come up with anything. How are you? But really, how are you, though?
Someone else asked me that earlier this week, and I told them the truth. I said, I am full of joy and lots of joy and happiness. None of that's true. I wake up every day and I think to myself, well, another day down the shitter. And that's only 6:30 in the morning.
Unfortunately, you're not in your own bathroom. You're in your neighbor's bathroom, but with a small child in the corner, mommy.
And every morning I wake up and say, how did I get to this home? What a lovely home this is. Whose is it, I wonder? I'm doing okay, you know. People ask me how I'm doing, and my first thing I want to do is punch them. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's become a trigger salutation. Is that a thing? What, mm-hmm. The salutation means hello or goodbye, or yeah, both?
Both.
Okay, so don't fucking trigger me with asking how I am, because guess how I am? I live in 2020. Yeah. So that's how I am. Well, how are you?
That's why yesterday I didn't really want to do anything, because it was Friday the 13th in 2020. And I was just like, let's just be quiet.
Yeah, I'm going to get a tattoo today. I'm going to do all this shit. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to order something from the dispensary. Yep. I'm going to go to the thrift store and I'm going to look for something to watch on my new DVD player. Some Disney movie to watch. And then I'm going to go home and spin some records. Yep. And I'm not going to be wild or crazy. And
just gonna be quiet.
Yeah, so I've been spinning records. I've been doing my techno sets for weeks now. And I'm like crazy. I've barely even touched any of my vintage 45s for several weeks now. I've been in this total groove, which is what I do. I go through various stages of interest in music and what I like to play and what's moving me. And, you know, part of this experience of COVID and 2020 and everything that's happened, and I've talked a lot about the vintage scene and racism and stuff like that, and part of my experience this year has been in some ways to distance myself from the vintage scene, because I'm disappointed in its ignorance and stupidity, because I've always felt that maybe it's just because I think I'm fucking amazing, but I always felt that I had a deeper view of history and what I do in terms of how I dress and what I wear, in context to time and history and other people's experiences, Black people and Japanese people and World War II history and all the whole thing. And so I always have this image in my head of like what I'm doing, what time period I'm in, what's happening culturally in the country that I'm representing or in the world at the time that I'm representing. And so that includes things like slavery, mm-hmm. if I'm in the 1800s, or, you know, the civil rights movement, or in Vietnam, if I'm in 60s clothes, or, you know, so on and so forth. And so I'm disappointed in the vintage scene, because so many of them are racist, and so many of them are just ignorant to history. And context and clothing and so that attaches to music in some ways for me. So I've, you know, my root of DJing is techno and electronic music, and I found myself slowly morphing back into this library of music that I haven't really deeply listened to for a very long time. And I'm finding all kinds of new records that I didn't know I had, listening to other sides of stuff, new songs on B-sides that I never listened to. And I'm finding like this whole entire new library of music and applying that to being a DJ and expressing myself. It's instrumental music, so there's no real words. And I've had a very hard time articulating myself to anyone about my feelings about the world right now. I've become very, very inward living alone. I know I've talked about that several times. I've become very, very inward and insulated. I'm only able to talk to you or, you know, my sister or maybe one or two other people on any level that's below the surface. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to communicate with people properly. I think that's because I've been isolated and lived in such like extreme solitude. I'm lucky to have work to go to every day and a public to deal with. But it's sort of altering me, not in positive ways and negative ways. And a lot of that is I'm feeling very insulated from the world. I feel invisible to the world. I feel like I'm not seen. Part of that is that I had a huge Instagram page that I stopped and I created a new one because the old one was bringing me stress and anxiety. And I was connected to people that I didn't necessarily want to be connected to anymore. And so I started the new page. I haven't told anyone about it. But anyway, so that's what I do. And I have been DJing like crazy and expressing myself through this older form of music that I love that really motivates me. But also like applying like beat matching and actual like skills, DJ skills, and then posting them, and sharing those mixes with people. So, but yeah, I don't know. Everything, I just feel bizarre. I just feel like everything is just, I don't, it's like a Groundhog Day sort of experience where every day is almost the same, but like, I think the difference, part of the difference is in being that, the bookstore that we work at, it's not a stressful place to work at anymore. Whereas it used to be several years ago, it's not like that anymore. It's a much different atmosphere now. And so it's not a place where I go, oh, I don't want to go in now. It's like a place where I just go now and it's totally fine. Whereas a few years ago, I may have just dreaded going to, I dreaded going to work. So I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, you have at least that's one thing, because you said it was like a Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah. So you know, at least I'm not going to some place where I'm, like, depressed to be at, you know. And I started redecorating my office a couple days ago, and I've been bringing all my Star Wars stuff and decorating. I know, because your office looks really cool with all your little trinkets and toys. And I have all my trinkets and toys, too, but everything just was covered in dust, and it was all disorganized, and I had let my office kind of go to hell. So I just redid it, and it's starting to look really cool. And anyway, so...
And because you spend a lot of time in your office, mm-hmm. every day you spend probably 5 hours in your office, if not a little more. And I do too, at least, you know, 4 to 5 hours a day. Usually I'm in my office. So it is important to have, like, I have all my Funko Pops, yeah. and I have it lit. Very specifically, yes. I don't use the lights in the office. I have lamps and
string lights. Yeah, I think the lighting in is huge. And I don't know why, like, we had that conversation, why offices tend to think you need to have extreme fluorescent lighting to be productive. It's so unproductive.
For me.
It's so uncomfortable. And yeah. it's just like an uncomfortable, oppressive atmosphere. And it's so much nicer, even just having that one little lamp in my office now. Mm-hmm. Really seems to help. So, but I've been enjoying bringing all my Star Wars stuff and decorating it all. And
well, we walked, I think probably a couple weeks today. I think maybe it was Halloween. We walked.
Wait, when was Halloween?
2 weeks ago today.
Oh.
Isn't that weird?
I dressed up. Yeah.
You dressed up?
Yeah,
So no, it wasn't Halloween. It was maybe 3 weeks. So we walked down to the grocery store, I think, like on Saturday evening, and Tom, as we've talked about all the time, is a finder. So we were walking. He's like, look.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a Millennium Falcon. You guys who are hearing me know what it is. Like the Millennium Falcon, you know, that started in like 77 or 78. Like the real one. He found a real one, like basically intact.
Like sitting on the side of the street, like in a box.
Yeah. And now you've cleaned it and it looks so cool.
Yeah. It's almost all complete. It's missing like the mount for the radar on the top. I have the radar. It has like, it's missing the floor.
It's missing the game table.
The game table and the little floor slats. But like most of the stickers are intact.
In not even intact, but like in perfect shape.
And then I found a box that was filled full of Star Wars figures. They weren't the vintage ones, but they're the really cool modern ones that have the super detailed guns and like holsters and everything. It all comes off and you can do all the things. And
but that was all in that one thing, and it was just like you defined. I never even would have looked at it.
I saw it from like halfway down the block and I went, oh my god, and I started like running towards it.
And then we like turned around, brought it back to your house, and I was like, okay, so how many more times are we going to turn back to your house before we actually get to the grocery store? I think it's two, because I think you're going to find more stuff. I don't know if we did, but that was super fun. It was so cool.
It was rad because, I mean, I never had one. I always wanted one. It was way too expensive, you know, and my parents would never have bought us something like that big.
How much do you think that was when in 77? That was expensive, right? I bet it was like $40. That was expensive.
I bet you can find out. We can look it up.
Like $40 then was $100 now.
Yeah. But I always wanted one. And, you know, neighbor kid Scott Becker had one. And I remember playing with one. But this was the first time that I got to, like, hold it in my hand, like, as a grown-up and be like, oh, dude. And the front landing gear folds down to hold it like a handle so you can fly it through the air.
That's the coolest part. Like, I literally played with it at your house. Yeah. I'm like, boo, 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 boo.
It's so much fun.
Like, once again, that goes into the JCPenney catalog of it all. Oh, where it's like, that was the, you know, that toy section was like, you know, 100 pages, and there would be where it was just one little part was Star Wars, but then the next Christmas there were two or three pages of Star Wars.
Yes.
And all of the characters would be gathered around that Millennium Falcon toy, and that would be like the big piece of that photo, and then have, oh god, and it was just such a want, and I could never have it, and I don't think I ever saw one.
It would be really cool to, I bet people have those color newspaper ads. Remember when they would put out, like, Kmart would have, like, their Kmart special, and would have all the new G.I. Joe toys that were coming out. Like, somebody's got to collect
that stuff.
It would
be that classic catalog photo where all where all of the figures are just, like, standing in front of
diorama.
Yeah, in a diorama. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, totally.
And, like, what else you found? You found the Millennium Falcon. He found a box of the figures, and then there was that big Munster figure.
Oh, that one is mine already. I left that. A Rancor. There was a Rancor and some
other... You already had one, but it was in that bunch. But you didn't take that one.
I didn't because it wasn't vintage.
Yes.
I have a real vintage one from Return of the Jedi, which is at work right now. But I did... There was another Star Wars creature in there that I'm not familiar with. I think it's from one of the prequels. But I was like, I just don't want... Those are so big, such big toys. And like, you know what? I'll leave those for some kid. I'm going to take the cool shit. And I'll leave these other toys for the kid.
And,
So dude!
I'm going to post this today. I'll just post it in stories on Instagram, everyone. But
they're like, don't forget, kids, you need 500 stormtroopers to fill in your...
Yeah, you can't just have one stormtrooper. You need a lot of them, but it's the picture of the Millennium Falcon, and I'll put it on there along with the Jawa crawler. And what was that?
That is Darth Vader's... that's Darth Vader's, like, helmet chamber thing.
Got it. And that was... So that was 1888. So I will say right now, so the... Okay, so this is the JCPenney catalog from 1978. The Millennium Falcon was $26.99.
Woo! That's still a lot.
Like, that doesn't... Like, now is like, oh, yeah, well, I'll buy both of us
sure,
one.
I'll get two.
I'll get two, and that's no problem. But then $26 was probably, I would say, what, 60?
Probably
60
a lot.
To 75 now.
That's amazing.
And so that was expensive for a toy.
Well,
because
that's
why
we didn't get it. Now, I just had to wait almost 40 years for one.
Okay, so this sand crawler was radio controlled.
Oh, wow, $30.
And that was $29.88.
Still a deal.
Still a deal. And it moved. I forgot about that. But there's so much... like, if anyone has a JCPenney catalog, like, for real, get a hold of me, because I would, I'm sure I could buy one on eBay.
Oh, yeah.
But I just remember looking and looking and looking, and to look at that makes me so happy. Like, it gives me great memories to look at those.
I used to like the Cabela's hunting catalogs, too, because of all the,
yes,
all the camouflage and all the different, like, stuff.
Yeah, so we didn't have, like, was Cabela's a store?
I think it was a store. I think it was. Like,
and then
a,
you could do mail order.
Yeah. I don't know if we had them in California or not.
We didn't have one. I think they are now up in, I know there's a big one down here, like a huge experience one that you can go to. But, and I'm sure I've talked about this before, but a place where you could, so like, you could go to JCPenney and they would have most stuff, but it wouldn't be out, right? Like the box, you could see the boxes, you'd be at Target, but there weren't any built.
Yeah.
Right? So there was a place called LaBelle's, and LaBelle's was a place where you walked in and you got a little pad and a little golf pencil, and you walked through the store. There was not a box on in the store. It was everything out of the box and plugged in, so you could see exactly what it was, and then you wrote down what you wanted. So then when you went up, you gave it and you paid, and then you waited like 15 minutes. And then
you
they brought
to
your
mask though?
Then you did, yeah. Oh. And that was the 70s. And then they brought your stuff up. But we could go and they would have these dioramas just out. They'd be encased in like plastic, but you could see everything and you could see it out and see what you could do with it. And once again, now that you mentioned it, there was like 100 stormtroopers. So I was like, well, I need 100 of those.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember ever getting a new Star Wars toy except for a TIE Fighter toy that I got one time, a little tiny one. I didn't get one of the big ones. But even the figures, like, I don't remember my parents ever... I remember my parents just being like, oh, those are just gimmicks, which is just so crazy to me. Like, that Star Wars, such a big deal, like, such a huge, big thing. And when the toys started coming out, I just remember my parents... They would just like refuse to get us Star Wars stuff. They're just gimmicks. It's just gimmicks. It's just money making gimmicks.
I mean,
and
sure.
You're like, yeah, but it's a fucking goddamn Millennium Falcon, people. What are you talking about? Like, that's not a gimmick. Like, that's an amazing toy. For it's just weird to me that my dad, who built models and like had toys all over his house, all over the house, and like. They would buy us ship toys and ship models and airplane toys and airplane models, but not Star Wars.
The Sonic Land Speeder, I had that.
Now, is that one the one where the hood opened up?
The hood opened up, and then on the bottom were the wheels.
The little wheels.
That if you pressed it down, they weren't on, right? But then, they were like bouncy, so you could do it. But
I found one of those at
away.
The dump. I found one of those at the dump in the 80s. So it couldn't have been that old at the time.
I
got rid of it. I had it for years and years and years. Why did I ever get rid of it?
Well, that's what I really wish. I really do like think about it. And I looked on eBay the other day for Smurf stuff. I was like, God, I wish I wouldn't have gotten rid of the... I don't even know what happened. It was just like they went to nieces and nephews, probably different things like that happened. But I looked the other day for a Mushroom House. And it's like, you can find them.
A mouse.
A mouse. You can find them for like $20. But at the same time, it's like, there was one in the box.
You need that in your office.
And I was like, oh, I really didn't need the mouse because I had one and I want it so bad. And then I just want a real Papa Smurf, and I'm having a very hard time finding one that's not been made in the last 20 years.
Yeah. We need to go check out Toy Safari. They have a whole Smurf section and a whole Smurf box.
We do. It's
full of COVID and Smurfs.
Well, she cleaned all the COVID off everything. You and I did a couple weeks ago, I think, three weeks ago. You and I did an out-of-town trip.
Oh, yeah.
We drove down to San Jose, California, about, 45 minutes away?
Yeah.
And we went to... Streetlight Records, and we went to the Salvation Army down there. That is so big.
So while we were there at Streetlight, there was a record in, I think it was in like the dollar bin. It was like a few bucks. So I didn't buy it. it wasn't the dollar bin. It was like $3 or $4. But I was like, oh, wow, interesting. I've never seen this. I should probably get it. Maybe I'll get it for Ivy, who's a huge fan of Disney Descendants. It's a Descendants record.
Oh, yeah.
Vinyl. And I was like, nah, that's stupid. I put it back on the shelf. Well, in my deep freaking dive of Disney research, I looked that record up. It's like a $50, $100 freaking record. It's super, super rare. And I'm like, God damn
it. Well, we need to hop in the car, right?
I need that fucking record,
man. We can be there by 1:15.
I'm wondering if I call my friend Mari and let her know, but then they'll be like, oh, no, I'm sorry. That's listed in our eBay store now for $70.
Well, that was the thing. So we went to Streetlight Records.
In San Jose,
and within a minute and a half of being there, it's nice. Tom and I, we can be together when we're looking, but we can also be apart and just, check in with each other as we go. It's not super high maintenance, and I'm used to hearing Tom. I'm used to hearing that a lot when we're out, but we just haven't been out in 9 months. So I heard Tom? And then turned and she was so excited. And it was your wonderful friend, Mari, mm-hmm. who was just right away, when you meet certain people right away, before you even introduce me to her, I was like, oh, well, this is a super cool person. And this person means a lot to Tom. And I can tell when people do.
We have a long, long friendship. And she's been a record store person for almost as long as I have.
But she's just right away. There's just an open... You could just see that she was just an open heart and just was like the nicest person. She just beamed that right away.
Yeah.
And of course, the first thing that she said was, oh my God, I want to hug you so bad.
I know.
And, but she was so sweet and it was so nice it's always nice to meet people from your past. But I could tell that she meant a lot to you right away.
We met at a friend's house in Aptos, California in probably 1993. It must have been 1993 or maybe early 94. And I was DJing a small, teeny tiny house party. One of my early, early, earliest gigs ever. And there was like maybe 5 or 6 people there. And she was the girlfriend of one of the housemates of my friend who was renting the home. And yeah, we became friends right away. She was super into the music. And then, I started DJing at raves and she was a regular, she was a dancer and then, and got very involved with music and eventually started working at Streetlight Records in Santa Cruz when I worked at Logos in Santa Cruz down the street. And we'd just been friends for decades. So yeah, it was cool. Really, really good to see her.
Yeah.
And she's a huge New Order Joy Division fan like I am. Like, huge.
She was very sweet. Yeah. She was very nice to me. She was very nice. Yeah. We did discover, what do you do during the time of COVID when you are in a town that you don't know? And where do you use the restroom?
I don't know. I always have these bathroom stories. What the fuck's up with that? Well, like, because there's the time where I pooped my pants in high school. There was the time where I almost peed my pants, like... When I was thrift shopping with Megan on Haight Street.
Oh my God, there is.
Like,
there is.
There's always these stories. And so, like, what happens to me? This is like ever since I was a kid. And it would just be like, I don't know why my parents wouldn't just take me to the bathroom in the first place. But my dad would be like, hey, it's Friday. We're going to go to the hobby shop and we're going to go buy some new models. It's payday. And be like, yay. And we'd go pick them up and we'd head over. And the minute I would walk into the hobby shop, the goddamn second.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I have to go to the bathroom really bad, like right now.
My dad would be like, dude.
And that's the thing about you is that you will say, I have to use the bathroom right now.
Yeah.
Like right away. Like the moment
I don't know what it is. I don't know. My body's like, hey, dude, everything's cool. How much liquid you drink? Oh, it's 70 cups of water. Interesting.
Boom.
When do you think you might have to pee?
So we're driving in San Jose, and he goes, so, in this time of COVID, where does one use the restroom? And I said, Tom, no. And you said,
they don't let you do it anywhere.
And you said, I got to go right now. And we went to several places.
Oof. The gas station, that one fucking asshole that wouldn't even open the thing. He's like, no. And I was like, okay. Soup Nazi. No bathroom for you.
Yeah.
But so anyway, then we drove around and I ended up going in behind a tree, like in a parking lot of a church or something.
We went around a curve and I pointed to it and I said,
I had to water the Jesus tree. It's part of my job. Leave me alone.
We went around a curve and I said, that parking lot has a large wall in front of it and it's empty. We are more than likely going to end up back here and you need to prep yourself for that. But let's go to one. So then we went to the Salvation Army and you walked in. I tried to find parking, but was a little stoned and was scared to park into a place.
I was like, maybe I can do the thing where you like convince yourself that you don't have to pee. You're like, you use mind control. You're like, you don't have to pee. This isn't the pee you're looking for. I can go about my business with no problems. Use the force, and it just makes it worse. It just pushes it forward faster.
Well, so then he came out, and I was like, sorry, dude, but we got to go back to that parking lot.
But thank God it was there.
Thank God it was there because you went and it was safe. No one could see you. Yeah. There was no one to offend. You know what I mean? It was an empty place. I felt bad
for the couple that was sitting there having a picnic. But I was like, hey, man.
Hey, is that tuna salad?
Move your blanket.
It's out of my control. Did you ever see that? What was that summer thing that you could buy? The crazy wacky weasel or whatever. And you put it on the hose and it would whack everywhere. Well,
yeah. So I don't want to whack anyone with my crazy wet weasel. But
so here is this fits into a small segment of Hank's Record Corner.
I don't remember how the thing went.
You did a
that was it. I remember.
And so
it was like an elephant trumpet.
We're at a Streetlight Records, and I find a couple things right away that I want. And we had, about a month ago, I said to Tom, you know what? I cannot find Tears for Fear songs from the Big Chair. I'm going to just have to buy the new, you know, pressing of it. I'm just going to have to do that because I can't find it anywhere. It's only like $27. And he said, you are crazy. We're going to go right now and find one for $1. I can't believe you. And of course, they're all $27.
Yeah, what the fuck, people?
So I found one.
That's bullshit, by the way.
It is. I don't know. Where are they? It was a huge album. I don't know.
That record is, there used to be a dime a dozen. Anyway, it's not bullshit. It's a good record to be worth
money. It's a good record, and I bought it. But so I saw, you know, it was one of those things that it's just a lesson that you learn when you're looking for anything, right? If you see something that you want and you're really like, I want that, even if you're going to think about it, grab it.
Descendants record. Dallas record.
Yes.
List continues.
We went a year ago.
Both at the same freaking store.
A year ago, I found the Dallas soundtrack or songs from Dallas, the TV series. And when we walked in, I was like, would you look in that bin and see if that Dallas record is there from a year ago? But there was the Best of the Spice Girls vinyl. Mm. And I thought, you know what? That's fun. And I went over to get it and some girl had it. Mm-hmm. And I'm still incensed by it. Yeah. So when you're shopping and you find something you like, grab it. Even if you don't buy it, you'll put it back. But have it in your possession so you can make that decision and some youth doesn't tear it out of your hand.
That's what I did with these boots that I'm wearing. I got these new boots yesterday at the Goodwill. Brand new English laundry. Really nice boots for walking to work in the rain. And because I have my vintage shoes, leather bottom soles, and my feet get soaking wet and it ruins the shoes. And I was like, you know, I walk back and forth to work. I'm gonna get some nice shoes. So they're $10, got them. But then I was like standing there and this woman like walked in very hurriedly. And she saw me standing at the register holding them. And I saw her kind of eye them as she walked past, and then she like went over and like walked over to the shoes and then walked around the shoe section, and then she kind of walked past again and she was like kind of looking, and I could tell she was like, God damn it, I wanted those. And she was like,
had that, came weird, back for
that weird look where she was like looking not at me but at the item in my hand. And yes. I was like, I know you wanted these, huh?
That's your fault.
But then last night I was looking at them and I was like, oh, one says 10 and one says 10 and a half.
Oh.
But then I, like, put them up together, and they're exactly the same.
But they fit fine.
And they both fit perfectly. And so I'm like, is one a little bit bigger? And I was like, I can't tell, and now it's driving me crazy.
But maybe your foot is a little bit bigger.
Well, I do. My left foot is slightly bigger. Well, I removed my big toe.
Yeah, like Cinderella.
To fit into a pointier shoe. Yes. Just on one foot, though.
Just on one foot.
Yeah, I like a left pointer, if you know what I mean. Hey, it's the first joke I said the whole podcast. We're 39 minutes in.
39:38.
But yeah, so yeah, grab it. And I've learned that also with you know, shopping for records, and in particular with DVDs, because at the thrift shops, because, you know, we've talked about those people. They're sharks, right? But none of them really know what they're doing. And they'll just grab random stuff and stand there with their phone and scan it and see if it's worth something. Whereas, like, what I used to do is I would grab something and I would check the condition first and be like, oh, is it in good shape? And then I would look over and I'd see somebody grab the cool thing right next to it. So now what I do is I grab everything I want. Yeah. And so I'll have a big stack of DVDs like this. Oh, my God.
It was so close. It was so close to knocking down all that water.
So now I'll have a big stack of everything that I want, and then I'll sit down and I'll check the condition of everything, and I'll put them back as I go. Because inevitably, some other shark is going to swim by and be like, ooh, I want that mayonnaise sandwich. And they're which is what I call DVDs.
I would take a mayonnaise sandwich right now.
Did you ever... Never mind.
Extra white bread, please.
Well, remember there was that one meme of the angry white people? There was like the Trump supporters that were, and it was like they were with their flags and yelling and like pictures of them like screaming and stuff, and the meme just said angry mayonnaise noises. And I was like, that somehow that makes the most sense of anything I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, that was the last of that. But I also discovered a new band.
Who is that?
Well, they're not a new band. They've been around for a while. They are a London-based band. I think they're London-based, and their band leader, I think, maybe Swedish.
Okay.
They are called, and I'm not sure how to say the name properly, it's Fanfarlo or Fanfarlo. And It's two of those records that I got at the thrift store the other day. Oh. And I was, you know, whoa.
Drag racing.
I ended up finding some great records. I found a Mumford & Sons. I found an album leaf. I found Decemberists. I found a bunch of cool reissues of like blues records from the 50s that I'll be selling in my eBay store soon. And then...
What is it?
Fanfarlo.
Fanfarlo.
One word. Fanfarlo. And it's... I you know, listen to everything I buy if I don't know what it is, and to determine whether I'll sell it or not. And so I found two records of theirs, and the second one is just a couple years old, I believe, and it's signed by all the band members. Anyway, I put it on and I was completely blown away. It's such great music. It's got that total 80s post-punk retro vibe to it, but more in like the Echo and the Bunnymen kind of post-punk and the Church and that kind of stuff. They're very, very cool. But they also employ violins and piano and other interesting instrumentation. But some of the songs are very, like, Joy Division post-punky, and some of them are very light and beautiful and ethereal. Anyway, they're very, very good. Highly recommend them. Fanfarlo.
That's cool.
One album is called Let's Become Extinct, I believe.
That's what it looked like, yeah.
And then the album before that is the one that I'm really, really fond of. I can't remember the name of it, but it's very, very good.
And it's led by Simon Balthazar.
Yeah, Balthazar.
Which is such a good name. Yes. Simon Balthazar.
Isn't Balthazar the name of the bad guy in Battlestar Galactica? I think it is.
I think so, yeah.
I think he's one of the bad guys.
Uh-huh.
Sean, can you verify that for us, please?
And then there was, our friend Sean's been posting some quality things lately. Every time I see something, I want to like screenshot it and send it to you. Or,
and I've already seen
like,
it.
Oh, yeah. And then I've already seen that you've liked it. I was like, okay, good. So he's not missing these things, which is good.
We also, we had, this is just a catch-up episode, a catch-episode. We had some famous people die. There was Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah.
And James Bond.
Yeah.
He was shaken, not stirred, as we all were, to hear the news. I know he's up there right now thinking, yes, Tom, that's true. We named a dog in Indiana.
Oh, my God.
And then... somebody else died from the game show.
Alex Trebek. Yes.
Yes, that was sad. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was today, and I didn't know this until a moment earlier, but today is the anniversary of Ruby Bridges attending her elementary school by herself for the first time. And I knew the basic story, but we read through, and I didn't realize the depth of it, but. Oh my God, little girl, you were awesome. Yes. You were awesome. You are my fucking hero. And yes. I am surprised that, oh my God. Anyway, her new book, Ruby Bridges, it just came out last Tuesday. It's called This Is Your Time. It's a little tiny format hardcover. Mm-hmm. I flipped through it. It's very, very nice, very interesting. So that was in February 14th, 1960, that she was escorted by federal marshals to attend her first day of being the only black girl at an all-white school. Apparently, the first day her and her mother spent in the principal's office because there was so much rioting and fucking bullshit going on that they were not even able to move to the classroom until the second day. And she was taught by one teacher alone in a classroom as if she was an entire class. And, several people pulled their children out of school and because of this little girl. And first of all, white people, get the fuck over your goddamn fucking selves.
Just get
Are
the
you
fuck,
fucking serious?
Get the fuck over it.
You fucking suck.
Just move past it.
And I'm part of you. You guys, I fucking hate us. It's a fucking embarrassment. You're
yes.
a fucking embarrassment to humanity. All you fucking little pigs fucking, and I don't mean to like, you know what? Pigs are rad.
They
you
are.
Guys suck.
They are.
You guys suck. Anyway, so, but then every day she'd go to school and this one teacher would come up to her with a little black doll in a coffin and show it to her. And the other teacher would threaten to poison her every single day. So the federal marshals decided, Eisenhower was like, you know what? You guys have to make sure that she eats only the food she brings. And that's what she did for the first fucking year of school. She ate by her goddamn self the food that she brought because she was scared. Because some fucking teacher, mm-hmm. a teacher.
Yeah.
A teacher.
Because I'll tell you right now, there's teachers right now that on Monday, there are teachers right now that on last Monday, they were crying and saying how horrible things were going to be now. And they were being very vocal. And that is a generalization, but you know there were. There are people, it's like I've been trying to shield myself from the news just because I've been so down and especially leading up to the election. But here's the thing. Sometimes you have to watch the horrible things that are said on a daily basis by people who think that they're in the right. And that's what you have to remember is that when they say horrible things about gay people, any person of color, all of that stuff, they know that they are right in what they are saying. And that's the thing that scares me the most. And, you know, you keep hearing these words, well, you're going to find yourself on the wrong side of history. They don't give a fuck about what
well,
side of
dead.
History they're on.
They'll be dead. And that's what the Germans thought as well. You know, and
I just think of like little queer kids who are sitting in a house right now where their parents are talking and saying horrible racial mm-hmm. slurs about Kamala Harris mm-hmm. and saying horrible things about Joe Biden and saying horrible things about gay people and every day how they hear this. I think of little queer kids. I think of little non-binary kids.
I think of little straight kids.
I think of little straight kids hearing it because they don't feel that way because their friends are gay or they are whatever, they're open and they can't be who they are.
Or they're just,
and that is a great point, straight or gay. You cannot be who you are because who you are is a person who is progressive and not even progressive. You're just a human who
it's
thinks
just a
about
human
people
being. yeah it's so anyway people need to get over themselves
and under themselves under you say
under it is it anyway, yeah, get over yourselves. You're all stupid. And then another random thing I wanted to throw out there was was it Tuesday? Tuesday was Veterans Day. And so I wanted to acknowledge all of the veterans out there that have done their hard work. And like I said on my Instagram, if you were a veteran and you went away and you were not welcomed home, welcome home. But I do have a story about Veterans Day. Once, I may have shared this story before, I knew a man who was a Vietnam veteran who was in the United States Navy. He was part of the what they called the River Rhine Forces, the Brown Water Navy. And that was the guys in the Mekong Delta that went up and down in the boats, like in Apocalypse Now. And he had served a few tours and shared with me some of his stories. And anyway, he came into Logos one evening, and he was a regular. He collected blues music and was a highly, highly, highly skilled guitar player, old-time guitar player. Anyway, he came into the store one day, and I said, "Hey, happy Veterans Day." And he stopped, and he looked at me, and he put his finger in my face. He said, "Don't fuck with me." And I said, "Sorry, Steve, I didn't mean it like that." And he shook his head, and he turned around, and he fucking walked out of the store. And so ever since then, I've been very sensitive about saying happy Veterans Day, because I don't feel like most veterans are happy about their service, unless they're brainwashed Trump fanatics. They're not happy about their service because they know that what they've been asked to do has not been that helpful. Some of them. But anyway, so I'm very sensitive about saying happy Veterans Day to people. I do acknowledge Veterans Day, of course, because I do appreciate our veterans. But some of them, part of this whole experience of decolonization and peeling back the layers of history has exposed some alarming realizations for me in my own interest in World War II and my own interest in history and veterans, World War II veterans in general. And that is, I realize now how many veterans from World War II were racist. And when you hear about these guys going off to war to fight fascism, that's not what they were doing at all. They didn't give a fuck about fascism. They were actually probably more akin to being wrapped up in what is now called toxic masculinity and being pushed to a point where they felt like they had to go or they wanted to go because that was the patriotic and American and white man thing to do, because a lot of those guys fought against integration with the military, and the guys that were often fought along with the black soldiers that were in segregated units, they hated these soldiers. And they were terribly racist to them, and they treated them like shit, and they gave them poor training because they thought they were stupid. And I think about people like my grandfathers, who I admire so much because of their accomplishments during the war, and I realized that both of them were terribly, terribly racist people. Terribly racist, disgustingly racist, vocally racist, hate-filled people. In addition to being loving grandfathers. That's what they were. And I started thinking about it, and I started watching World War II documentaries a while back about the black soldiers and the 94th and the 93rd Infantry Divisions in Europe and the 761st Tank Battalion, and realizing the level of the common American soldiers' hatred for black people and the contradiction of them being cast in this light of, they're off to fight fascism. And they weren't. They were not off to fight fascism. Some of them definitely were. Some of them were because they had relatives in death camps. But a lot of them didn't really. That wasn't anything that they were going there for. They were going there because of guilt, out of patriotic duty, out of cultural expectations. But they didn't care about fascism. They didn't care about it. Who does right now? Even now, who cares about it? No one. So they didn't care about it then, for sure. But anyway, so it just casts this new light where I'm going back and looking at soldiers that I consider, and I'm like, was that man a racist too? Did that man go fight fascism and kick the Germans out and liberate the Jews and then come home and stand out in front of a fucking school with a goddamn picket sign that said whites only? Mm-hmm. Is that what you fuckers did? And did you people in 1960 who had given birth to your children 15 years before or 10 years before, did you teach your children to stand out there and scream at Ruby Bridges after you went to fucking war and fought the goddamn Germans to kick the fascists out? Or were you there for another reason? And so my worldview has been rattled, and I think that's part of my inability to articulate my feelings is because I am peeling back so many layers and going so deep into the indoctrination of how we have been raised in this 100% completely white view of the world. Again, I can't articulate it, but I'm working on it.
I have so much to say.
I can't even get it on paper. I can't even get it out onto paper. I can't, you know, I used to do those things where I would talk into the camera and I would do these videos. I can't even do that. It's so inward. It's so insulated. And it's almost like I'm baking a new consciousness inside, you know, like, it's not fully formed. It's not fully ready. Like, all the ingredients haven't been put in yet. So I can't present it to the world. But I'm really mad at those World War II veterans. I'm really mad at them. And I'm mad at the reenactors. And I'm mad at the vintage scene for allowing and normalizing and condoning all of that. And even my own guilt of looking and going, what are these soldiers? Who were these guys? You know, it's like I have this romanticized version of them, but it's really not. It's paradoxical. It's romantic, but on the other hand, it's also traumatic because I know what war does to people. And so, but I'm mad at you guys. Don't tell me you went off to fight fascism and you were Antifa and you were fighting the fight for America. You were fighting the fight for what you considered to be white America. The privilege that all of these fucking crazy fucking conservative Republican psychos now are trying to hold on to. That is what you were fighting for. That is why your grandparents went to war.
And I don't think it's even fair to say Republican, because what those people are is not even part of that party. You know what I mean? They're conservative, and then they're putting all these other hateful spins on it, which they're fine to do, but that isn't indicative of what the Republican Party was. It certainly wasn't. You know, you look at Reagan now and you're like, oh my God, what a sweetie.
I know.
Or even Bush and go, oh God, he was the greatest, huh? I know. Because there wasn't this, there was always, there's always been hate in our country.
These are people that actively started wars in other countries that are directly connected to so many of the problems that we have going on right now. All the shit Reagan did.
Yep.
All the shit.
Which is a lot of bad shit. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that.
But even Obama with Syria and drone strikes in Syria at the end of his second term. A lot happening.
There's a lot happening, but I will say it is nice to record again, and it's nice. I know that people have wanted us to, and it's just.
Did anyone like our picture that we posted yesterday on the Instagram?
When you sent that to me, I was like, "Oh my God!" You were like, "I already posted it."
Songs from the Big Hair.
You know what I did? Another thing that I'm only able to find on new pressing is Kate Bush, The Sensual World. And I love that record. It was a really, really big part of me. Like when I moved to California, I found it within a few weeks of moving to California. And it became this thing that was like me being a grown up was listening to that record. And then there was a VHS companion where she had made a video of every song, which I'm sure, I think Beyonce does that, but I don't But I thought that was such a cool thing, and that happened a lot, especially in that video age. But last night I found an original pressing of it for like $14 on eBay, and I was just like, buy it now, buy it now, buy it now.
And you hit that button like six times. So I did. Have six copies
coming. So I have six copies coming. So sensual world for everyone.
Is there anything else you'd like to ramble on about?
I don't know. I mean, there is a lot of stuff, but no. But I did think of, like, different little topics that I have wanted to talk about that I've been writing down and fun things. And I do just want everybody to, you know, just, like, be cool, man. Just be cool. Wear your fucking mask. Shut the fuck up. And just be cool.
Yeah, it took a couple years for this shit to go away in 1918. It took a couple years, but it took a couple years of people wearing masks. So just ask yourselves how much longer you'd like this to be.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Personally, I would like to, like, meet a woman and, like, go on a date sometime. That would be cool. That would be great. Cool. That would be great.
That's going to be a fucking second. So if you
could wear your masks, that would be great. Because then my life can have some sort of meaning.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, instead of you going there watching fucking football at the goddamn pub with your fucking mask off, chucking it up with a bunch of jocks. What is this? Fucking Castro Street?
Here's the thing. Please do not chuck it up. I asked you to do one thing. Do not chuck it up. Yeah, I'm cool.
Okay, I'm cool.
Are you cool?
I guess.
Everyone?
I have to go to the bathroom now.
Right now. There has been a moment where you have held up your hand and looked at me and said, I have to go to the bathroom right now.
Excuse me.
All right, everyone. Thank you. You are the best. I'm assuming. I don't know all of you.
And the other ones are probably very okay.
You know what? Hang in there. Have a great day. Thanks so much. Stay awesome.
Stay rad.
Okay, bye. Bye-bye.